Recovery Sort Of is a podcast where we discuss recovery topics from the perspective of people living in long-term recovery. This podcast does not intend to represent the views of any particular group, organization, or fellowship. The attitudes expressed are solely the opinion of its contributors. Be advised, there may be strong language or topics of an adult nature.
Welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of. I'm Jason, a guy who is trying out some different theories of psychology.
And I'm Billy. I'm a person in long-term recovery.
And today we're going to talk about, weirdly enough, for probably a lot of people, polyvagal theory. Like, and you might be asking yourself, what the fuck is polyvagal theory? Which I totally understand because I thought that a while back too. And I think the idea here is I'm going to kind of describe the real general basics of the theory. I mean, there's a lot more to it than just, you know, the little bit we'll talk about here. And then we'll explore, you know, does that seem like it's relevant to recovery or addiction or why we use or how we could help people who are using? Or is that our idea? I think that was our idea.
Yeah, that's where I thought we were going with it.
Okay, great. So polyvagal theory, what the fuck is it? It talks about the idea, you know, the theory is that through evolution, our nervous system has undergone changes, right? And it's like a layered nervous system now. So in the beginning, you had these ancient lizard relatives of ours, and when their body sensed danger, their nervous system went into a state of immobilization. It just completely shut down. We talk about that nowadays as like playing dead or freeze, the freeze response to the nervous system. So, you know, a lizard's there, it sees something that's going to attack it, maybe doesn't even see it. It just senses it because it deals a lot with the idea that the body senses these dangers to us before our brain awarely, consciously does. And its body shuts down. Lizards don't need as much oxygen as humans do or mammals do. So it really, really shut down, like a whole lot of its bodily systems did. Now, this happens in animals and mammals, too. We call it playing dead, but that really doesn't give credence to the idea that their body truly is shutting down its systems. That's what happens. So then you fast forward like 100 million years, you know, different animals are evolving and everything, and we get this second nervous system that's layered on top of that. This nervous system is where the body senses danger. And the survival response is to give the body energy, right? And this is what we would look at as fight or flight. You know, you see a lion, you either need to be able to fight against the lion or run away from the lion. Now, a couple hundred million years after that, mammals are around and we're evolving, we're growing. You might survive, right, as a caveman or a primitive human, and I might survive as a primitive human. But if me and you and maybe some other people could get together and form some sort of tribe or coalition or collective, we have a better chance at survival, right? So our nervous system had to adapt to ways to kind of mitigate that and make sure that we were safe in that connection. And so if me and you meet up and we're like, man, we should probably start a tribe. We can do better as a tribe. We can build a community. We can farm together, whatever we're thinking, right? I need to know that you're not going to stab me while I'm sleeping tonight and kill me, right? So I need to sense in your facial expressions and your tone of voice whether you're dangerous or not to me. So the theory is there's like this ladder. This is how we depict it, right? On the bottom of the ladder is this freeze response. The middle of the ladder is this fight or flight response. And the top of the ladder is this kind of calm, safe connection between, you know, people of the same variety, which would be humans in our case. Now, when your safety is challenged, when your body, you know, has its little, you know, surveillance system out for all these different things going on, and it senses danger, we still have these survival responses that happen in our body. So the first thing that's going to happen, you're walking out your door, you're feeling safe, connected, everything's great. Something happens, you're not even aware of it. You have no idea what's going on. But your body senses this danger, and so it instantly pumps you energy. Heart beats faster, breathing shallows, you're ready to do something, right? Now, in history, that would have been fight or flight. we don't need to fight anything or run from it right now, right? So we have this energy. Now, historically, the idea being if you fought the bear and won or ran from the bear and got away, you're done, right? The energy goes away. Your body returns back to safety. You go back up the ladder. The problem in 2021 is there is no bear. We don't have to fight it. We don't have to run from it. And so our body, when it's maladaptive, which, you know, I'll get into that in a second, it doesn't return to safety. It doesn't get to go back up the ladder. It gets this energy and it doesn't actually fix anything. Our body still feels like it's in danger. And eventually over time, the bottom of the ladder nervous system will say, yeah, that's not working, and just shut us down, right? So we look at these through the lens of the idea that, like, there's this safe, calm place. There's kind of this middle, energetic, anxious, irritable kind of place in the middle. And at the bottom, there's like this real low energy, disconnected, withdrawn, depressive kind of place. Now, just to clarify, none of these are static. Like, you don't sit in any one of these all the time. Like, you flow throughout them, and there's various stages. That's why it's a ladder. There's a lot of different rungs. So you're never always in one of these. You're always fluctuating every day, right? Even when you breathe in and breathe out. When you breathe in, you go down towards the middle of the ladder. Your heart rate speeds up. You get a little more energy. When you breathe out, the other nervous system kicks back in. You go back up the ladder. So it happens all the time. The idea behind this is that if we're co-regulated people, this top of the ladder nervous system regulates with others. It starts pre-birth. And then through the nursing process is where all these skills become, where our body gets better at tuning into what's dangerous and what's not. So the theory is that if you have a less than perfect or ideal environment in your childhood, in your upraising, your body gets misattuned. It starts interpreting signals that aren't dangerous as danger. It starts interpreting signals that are dangerous as not dangerous, and you're all out of whack. And we have kind of long given the idea that you need to self-regulate. And this theory kind of says that doesn't work. Like, we're co-regulating humans and we need other nervous systems that are calm and regulated, and if we ever want to get to a calm and regulated place. So what do you think about that so far?
So I did spend a half an hour or so doing my own little bit of research this morning to understand this. There's a few what I'll call little key points, I guess, for me, that just to clarify so that we're on the same page. One was that this is all like subconscious stuff. Yes. It's nothing that you like intellectually recognize or notice or whatever. It's almost like just reflective or reactive.
Yes.
It's not something you have any control over. And where it becomes, I guess, useful as far as therapy is, as you mentioned, our old beliefs of stress was that, oh, you have stress in your life. Well, you just stop having that stress and then you're fine. So if you have a lot of stress at work, you know, you find a way to manage that stress and you'll just be good. And this theory kind of challenges that and says, well, that's not really true. You can't just take the stress away and then things get better. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So to speak to the first point you made, we feel a million different perceptions throughout every day. Like, they're all over the place. Like, if you stop right now while you're listening and just think about it for a second and tune in and put your awareness on your feet, well, you can actually sense the pressure your feet have against whatever is underneath them. And you can sense maybe the material of your sandals or your shoes or your socks or whatever it is. And if you sense like your shoulder and neck area, you can kind of feel where your shirt hangs on it and the weight it has, right? Or the way it rubs, or the material's soft or it's coarse. And we ignore all this shit all the time. Like, we're so tuned out. And we kind of mentioned this in last episode, right? How we're not in tune with our bodies. And that's kind of the theory. So it's not that necessarily we can't be aware of all these things happening underneath, but we're very much not. And part of the process of healing, you know, or getting better with understanding our nervous system and our reactions is to start to tune more into what is it my body senses as dangerous in these different situations, right? Is it loud noises? Is it something else? Is it like people behind me too close? Like, who knows what our body's picking up on? But our body actually has the ability to sense these things, and we just ignore all of it all day long because it doesn't seem relevant to what we're doing, which is, you know, I'm driving down the road or whatever, I'm making dinner.
Yeah, so, and for me, interestingly enough, that's part of a meditation process that I do. When I'm meditating, I will, like, it's sort of, I'll call it a quasi-guided meditation. It's not exactly guided, but they have you kind of focus on your breath and then focus on like the weight of your body in the chair and the pressure and your feet on the floor and your hands in your lap and, you know, your breathing in and out, the rise and fall of your chest and those things like that you're talking about. Like these are all these unconscious things that are going on every moment of the day and we just ignore them. And so through this meditation, the idea is that we start to just get a little fraction of a second more in tune with some of those things.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, and we use the what we use in therapy a lot of times is referred to as like body scanning. Just scan your body, what's happening with it, right? And I've done some meditations like you're talking about, and they get progressively deeper, right? Like recently my meditation teacher was like, see if you can actually feel and picture your each lung like expanding and then like your diaphragm like coming down to expand. And it was interesting. I actually felt like I felt some of it. Do I know if any of it's real? Who the fuck knows? Right. It doesn't matter. But yeah, so the theory I think is beautiful in a way because it really helps people take away the shame of what they're going through, because we'll have these responses to our environment and whether they're misattuned or not, we just don't understand. And we're like, why can't I not be this way? What is so wrong with me that I can't not be anxious or I can't not be angry with my partner? Or I can't not do this, right? And this theory, when given to people, seems to sort of remove some of that shame, right? Like the impetus is no longer on my brain to fix this. It's like, oh, this is just what my body's doing in reaction to what's going on. And let me be curious and kind of figure that out. And even if, I don't want to say even if I don't figure it out, but even in the beginning stages of just being aware and knowing what's happening inside the body, I think that's relieving, right? When I start to feel anxious and I can say, oh, there's that middle of the ladder sympathetic energy coming in, right? It's a sympathetic nervous system doing that. That's interesting. What's going on there? That gives me the ability to not have to react right away. You know, and I heard this in a Buddhist self-help book one time, but it said, really, it doesn't really matter what we do differently now, as long as we do something that creates a difference or a space for something different to happen. That's all that really matters. If every time you get like reactive, you say fluffy butternuts or something, right? Like that creates something different right. And it creates space for something different to happen afterwards. And I thought that was an interesting thing all in itself.
Yeah. So with, I guess I'm going to try to figure some of this out in my head. My understanding was that we don't, or our bodies won't stay in that highly attuned top level. Like that's not the ideal state either. Like we'll sort of seek out like a kind of homeostasis. Like we can't stay in all this openness and awareness and that stuff all the time because that can put us in danger. So that we'll try to kind of self-regulate a little bit to be safe, to create safety.
Well, yeah. And so that's a big part of the theory is that we're trying to maintain homeostasis. Our body is always going to work towards that, right? And it's not necessarily that we want to be, you know, at the top of the ladder all the time. We want to be able to be in tune enough to, I know this sounds cheesy, but like honor and respect wherever our body's at, right? If we are feeling that sympathetic energy, well, that's not wrong. That's our body telling us we need this energy to try to return to a place of feeling connected and safe. And like, well, what does that mean I need to do right now? If I'm feeling this this bottom of the ladder, like disconnection and withdrawal from life. And I always look at this as like when I'm sitting at home and I'm just feeling, you know, like I don't really want to do anything. And then like somebody calls on my phone that I love talking to and that always makes me laugh. And I just look at it ringing and I'm like, I just don't have the ability to answer that right now. That's what I always think of when I think of my bottom of the ladder, right? Like, that's a cue for me. But it's maybe that's what I need for a while. Maybe I need to, like, kind of recharge from that place of, like, sort of being shut down a little bit. Or maybe I need some reflective time. Or maybe that's a cue that my body's trying to give me that I'm doing too much in my life and I need to set aside some time to be still, right? So it's not necessarily that any of these are wrong or bad, which I think is kind of our old theory about our nervous system, like no sympathetic, be in the parasympathetic. And it's not that, it's just what is it I need right now? And what can I do to assist that, to feel okay here? And in going with this, I think that's another key piece to not feeling shame, right? It's not about, oh my God, I'm irritated and anxious again. I gotta, you know, something's wrong with me. It's just acknowledging, okay, well, this is where I am. Like, what is it that I feel really I need to do? And how can I use this energy constructively? Because the energy's here. And if I do nothing, I'm just going to have chaos in my thoughts about what I should be doing. So what can I actually put this energy into that might be useful for me right now?
Okay. So do we, I guess, get more energy as we go up the ladder? Is that the idea? Or
not
is
exactly.
The energy only happen in that middle?
The
level?
Energy is the okay. Is the sympathetic energy in the middle. So the states okay. are, the bottom of the ladder is called dorsal vagal, which is part of the parasympathetic nervous system. It's located a lot in the stomach. That sends signals up, and that's really that disconnect and shutdown.
And not to cut you off there, but that state, at least what I thought I understood, was that when we say disconnect and shutdown, that might not just be like, oh my God, I play dead, but it could be like more the emotional breakdowns that people have, or like maybe depression where you don't want to get out of bed. Is that?
Yeah. And I think that's where the explanation gets interesting for the way we viewed it. Like, we always like the depression as a moral failing, right? Like, you just need to get up and go fucking be happy and get outside, right? No, it's a bodily state that is literally your nervous system is holding you back and
like
telling
a biological
you don't have
thing.
That. Right. And again, mammals' bodies don't shut down exactly the way the original lizards' bodies did because we need oxygen and we need more things to happen. But yeah, to some extent, there are severe changes in the way our body is functioning in those states. And then the sympathetic nervous system, you know, in the middle of the ladder with all its energy that's bringing forth. And then the top of the ladder is also another parasympathetic branch, but this one is more involved in the heart and lungs area, of the body. And that's not highly energetic either. It's just, you know, a calm, connected state. It's so if you want to visualize it, it's probably the state you would feel if you're like holding a baby that means a lot to you, or cuddled up with your favorite pet, or maybe some partner that feels really warm and safe and you guys are hugging. Like, that's the kind of state of the top where you just really feel like you're tied into that moment and that person.
Hmm. So is there I don't know what you want to call it. Is there an average state that we have, or they're just constantly moving all the time, no matter what?
They're moving all the time, but that we do end up with what we call like a home away from home. So ideally, like, our home state is going to be this place where we can connect and we feel open to the world and things feel warm. Hmm. That's what we hope for. But if we've been kind of misattuned by our caregivers, we end up more comfortable in one of these other states, because that's where we end up most of the time. For some people, that's more sympathetic and they're just kind of deal with the world from anxiety and aggravation. For some people, that's more of a low, disconnected, isolated, depressive kind of state. And again, there's flavors of these states, right? They're not just like, oh, it looks just like this. Like, it might look like this one day. It might be combined with some other states the next day to feel a little different. And we just kind of go through them all day long, every day. Even if, and a lot of people who struggle with mental health have trouble picturing this top of the ladder ventral vagal state that we talk about. Even if that's like that 3 seconds when you're walking out of work at the end of the day and you're like, ah, work's done for today, right? If work was really hard to get through, just that like relief of getting into your car and knowing that work's done, like that's that short top of the ladder experience, right? So we're all having these experiences. It's just being able to notice them and know when they are. And they might be very brief and hard to see. Some people report like, their immediate response feels like it goes straight to the bottom of the ladder into this dorsal vagal experience. But the truth is, we know there is a sympathetic experience in the middle there. It just might be so quick and fleeting for them that, like, they've just learned, it feels like they bypass it altogether.
Okay, so that gets back to your, when you were talking about trying to create space or create pause for something new.
Yes.
Or trying to sort of catch it before it drops all the way down to the bottom level. Is that the idea?
A lot of times that's what my idea is.
Okay.
But I don't think that's really the idea of the theory. The theory doesn't really necessarily say that any state is bad, right? It's just like, let's be able to recognize where we are and then learn, A, what cues in the environment get us there, and B, what is useful for us while we're there, right? And so these states, these nervous system states, were always meant to be a survival response to get us back to safety. That's the whole goal of all of them. And that safety is the top of the ladder, right? So it's not necessarily that anything's wrong with them happening. It's just, well, why? One, I want to know why, because maybe there's ways I can retrain my body to not interpret things that are generally safe as unsafe. But also, two, like, when I'm here, what kind of things help me to move back to a feeling of safety? Because we don't want to feel, in 2021, they're not so much survival responses. We like to call them adaptive survival responses, right? Because they're things that we've adapted that we think is going to make us feel better. Maybe that's biting our nails, right? Maybe that's, working around the house. Like, but they don't necessarily work to actually bring safety back into our bodily experience. And that's kind of the problem. We talk about our bodies get hijacked by the nervous system because we're unaware of it. And so when we get hijacked, we're reactive, right? We don't have the thought or choice, I don't want to yell at my kids. I don't want to yell at my partner. I don't want to go run to porn. I don't want to go get high. It's out of our control at that point when we're unaware. Our body's telling us, you need to survive now. Go survive. And I think from the therapy standpoint, where that goes to is people don't change and grow and adapt in survival environments. When your whole life is like, you know, the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if your body is focused on survival, you're not going to grow and adapt and become this, you know, true inner self that you want to be. Right. That's got to happen.
You're worried about food, clothing, yeah, shelter. You can't necessarily deal with emotional issues and higher functions, right?
And that's all got to happen kind of when we're in this ventral vagal top of the ladder place, which makes a lot of sense. But also, if we don't know that that's what's going on, can be really confusing for us because we're like, well, I have food, shelter, and clothes. Why don't I feel safe? I should be fine in this environment. And if we don't, and if we're not, then that feels like something's wrong with us.
Right.
So I guess, you know, how do we feel like that could apply to our understanding of what happens in substance abuse? Right. Like, is that where, or do you have more questions?
No, not at the moment. I'm trying to think of the substance abuse part. Like, so it ties in a little bit recently with a lady I heard talking about addiction, Anna Lemke, I think is how you say her name. She wrote a book recently on addiction and the, I think it's the endocrine system or whatever controls our dopamine and serotonin levels. Mm-hmm. And same as like we're, I guess in her, this is my paraphrasing her book, which could be completely wrong, but that our body seeks out the homeostasis that you were talking about and we'll sort of go back and forth between the work reward thing. Like we do hard work, we get a reward, you know, but that reward goes away, you know, and then it's, we need work to balance that out or hard things, stress. And so what I think is that in today's world, going to back to this nervous system understanding, are we not challenged with enough hard things? Like, so as cavemen, you know, you might have to go out and hunt for food and, you know, that's challenging and difficult and hard and, oh shit, I might not get food. But then you do hard work, you get a real reward for it by killing a elk or whatever, and then you take it back and you feed the family and you get this big endorphin rush and you're hopefully at your highest level, right, on the ladder and, you know, you get this community. But then eventually the food goes away and the stresses come back and you got to work again to balance that stuff out. And through our natural living, that might happen. But in today's time, we don't have those stresses. We don't have, like you said, for most people. I mean, right. Definitely there are some people that struggle with food and shelter. But in the modern world, that's not as common. And so do we create these stresses from other things? Or are they, I guess, like now all of a sudden, traffic becomes a major stressor in my life. And I totally lose focus on the fact that I'm driving around in a fucking car that's got air conditioner and a radio. And I'm completely, well, no, you're not completely safe, but I am relatively safe in the world. But I'm 15 minutes late for work and I want to fucking blow somebody's head off.
right. You know? So I guess from what I hear, what you're relating is like this idea that our body is programmed for survival, and yet we live in a world where we don't need survival a lot. And so it just kind of the body takes over and does what it does, which is look for these survival opportunities, and it needs those to kind of create that safe environment. I don't know. Honestly, I don't think that's like the polyvagal theory understanding.
Cut you off there for a minute. So and again, I'm paraphrasing my understanding of her book, so I could be slightly wrong. But her version of all that plays out in that now in today's world, we also have way too many things that are way too easy to send us into like the high, whatever you call it, the high endorphin high, you know, with computers and phones and the internet and porn and movies, you know, we can immediately throw our dopamine system into high, and that we think we're supposed to be there all the time, and that we don't recognize that there's true reward to hard work or stresses.
So I guess my hesitancy to like that idea is that it sounds like that the solution would be to create high stress things for ourselves. And I don't think that's the answer.
Well, by high stress, so she clarified that as that could be something not necessarily a negative, but it could be like working out and exercise at the gym. Like we go and we do that, like that's a hard, strenuous activity, you know, but by doing like we can find healthy stressors versus unhealthy. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's I'm not saying that's not a component of something that's going on. I guess where I think it doesn't quite line up is the idea. So in more of polyvagal theory understanding is that our co-regulation got misaligned from birth. And so now instead of having a body that's like, you know, a camera at your house that tells you when intruders come, it's more like this highly sensitive, you know, surveillance system you've set up all around your house on every door, every window, all cameras all over your property. And you've tuned it up to like the finest thing. So like the leaf blowing by is setting it off with like red alert danger signals, right?
Yeah, I always picture Star Trek.
Yeah. And so our bodies are in this hijacked response state at all times. And that doesn't give us any room to have the higher level thinking turn on and say, this isn't working. We need to redo some things. We want to live different. Like all it has is we need to survive. We need to just do something to feel like we can get by.
Okay. So that higher level then being our, what I'll to tie this back towards addiction is our connection to community, our connection to others, a connection, you know, this intimacy that we seek. And, you know, maybe if we're spending all of our time in that, you know, middle level, that sort of fight or flight, we never get that connection, then drugs seem like a great coping mechanism for two reasons. One, they help to relieve the stress of being at 11 all the time on our fight or flight response. And two, at least my experience, when we're high, I'm not going to say we don't need that connection, but in the moment of being high, you don't necessarily miss that connection.
Yeah, and I would think that being high would probably restore some sense of
It's an unnatural calmness.
Safety.
Or,
right, right, yeah. Right, right. You're
right, unnatural.
You know,
safety.
I kind of express that a lot of times in my share. Like, I called it fun, but my first experiences with Yuzin, looking back now, were the first experiences with serenity that I had. Yeah, there was a relief in that use. It was like all these things felt wrong inside of me, and my brain couldn't understand why, right? And then I used, and then, oh, things feel all right for a minute. Well, shit.
Well, yeah, and see, I was a heroin downer guy. Maybe that was why, because when I was high, I didn't give a fuck, like, you know. Versus then I don't understand, like, the crackheads, because why would you want to be up at, instead, if you were at 11, why would you want to go to fucking 50?
Well, maybe there are people who are at the bottom of the ladder to start.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. And then so, they just want to get to the,
yeah,
they so just want to get to the middle.
I just need something, which is, I don't know how I conceptualize myself, because I did both, right? I was shooting speedballs.
I did both, but I definitely didn't like the uppers. I was always high strung. Maybe I was in the middle all the time, because I always had that fight or flight energy.
Well, and I think that's a lot of the usefulness of this theory, is just understanding that our body has responses, and then our brain tries to understand it later.
Right. Make sense of it, right? Yes. It'll create a story, right?
Yes, and so we create these stories, and most of those stories are centered around something's wrong with me. It's me that's wrong, that can't control why I always do this. Why am I like this? Why, you know? And that's like the wrong question, right? The question is not what is wrong with me. It's what happened to me that got me here?
Right.
And then from there, understanding that, what can I do and where can we go from here? And I don't know that any of us can sit around and kind of figure this out on our own. Again, we're co-regulating people, right? So we need other safe people that have good information that can help us kind of regulate. So the nervous system regulates on three bases: outside stimuli, right? Inside stimuli, which means if you're sick or you took poison or something and your body organs feel wrong, that's going to be a danger signal. And also between nervous systems. So like when you and I talk, our nervous systems are sensing each other and where we're at. So if I was to sense danger, like if your eyebrows change and you know, your tone changes, I might say, man, we got to wrap this show up. I think Billy's going to stab me. Right? Like,
right.
So these are the three places that our body gets the cues from. But yeah, if you're living in a state of survival at all times and your brain has just always said there's something wrong with you, you're just going to seek out solutions to not feel like you're in danger.
Right.
And that's where I think drugs comes in. But we don't, I guess from the recovery side of that, we don't ever talk about that. We just say, you just need to fucking stop and get on board with this 12-step program and work the steps, and that'll fix it. And I don't know that I'm not saying that can't address this nervous system thing just by accident and by proxy, kind of. Like, oh, well, in that process, I'm hanging out with other people who have a calmer nervous system in recovery, hopefully. And, you know, in intimate connection with my sponsor, going over steps, I'm learning something.
Right.
But we don't specifically ever address the fact that what about people who can't even get to working a step because that feels like something so far from the way they feel on a daily basis. Like, yeah, okay, I'm clean now. I still feel fucking out of my goddamn mind. Like, my mind doesn't understand why my body has this reaction. Now what? What do we do for that?
This episode has been brought to you in part by Voices of Hope, Inc., a nonprofit recovery organization made up of people in recovery, family members, and allies. Together, members strive to protect the dignity of those that use drugs and those in recovery by advocating for treatment, harm reduction and support resources, and mentoring. Please visit us at www.voicesofhopemaryland.org and consider donating to our cause. Do we know how, or do they theorize at all, how addiction affects any of that or not really? Like, can addiction mess that whole nervous system up?
I'm sure it, you know,
yeah,
skews
I would imagine
everything.
It could. Yeah.
But no, what they mostly conceptualize is the idea of we have adaptive survival responses. And really, when we're saying adaptive, it's what we do, but they really have been maladaptive for our life.
Right.
They're responses that have brought us some sense of relief, right? If you think about like yelling at a kid, that changes your state, right? Not always for the better. And that's another thing. It's, I hate to use the words better and worse in here because there's nothing wrong with any of the states. But if I get that sympathetic energy, right, in the middle of my ladder and I lash out at my kid because that's just what comes naturally, right? I'm going to fix them. I'm going to correct them. And this isn't going to happen again because I don't like the way I feel. Well, generally, at some points in my life, that has made me feel safer again. I'm like, ah, took care of that. Thank God we ain't going to deal with that situation again. It's all right. Settled, right? And at other points in time in my life, that has made me go further down the ladder to, oh, man, you, why do you always do this? That's not the dad you want to be. You're such a piece of shit. And then it's like isolating because now I don't want to talk to anybody about it. I don't want to talk to anybody in general because I feel bad about me. I just kind of want to sit alone, and that just leads to being stuck in more of this danger zone, right? Like, yeah. Things aren't right.
Or if they're formed, you know, when we're kids, like we're so limited in our strategies on how to deal with trouble. You know, we haven't developed like nuances of thinking. It's like,
right.
Oh, I just run from everything. Anything hard, I run, you know, as
right.
a kid, that's, you know, that seems like a reasonable thing to do.
So can you picture any of these nervous system states? And I don't want you to like dive into one of them, but just to get a little flavor of what that experience is like for you. So I'm thinking, even recording the last episode, right? I had an energetic nervous system sympathetic reaction when, you know, Jen was telling me how she felt about some of the things I've said on here. And I felt my face get hot. I felt reactive. I was like ready. I know the thoughts that go with that are like, I'm going to defend myself and I'm going to put you down as well so that you don't think you know what's like. And that was kind of happening as I was sitting here listening to some of that. My heart probably increased in rate. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention at that moment. I know my face got really hot.
Yeah.
But yeah, can you picture any time recently where you felt anxious or agitated or irritable and what that was like?
Well, I was relating this to my personal struggles with large groups or large gatherings and how uncomfortable I feel. We recently went to a recovery convention. And as soon as I walk into a place full of people I don't know, and there's like hundreds of people, and everyone looks like they're talking and laughing. And for me, what that starts to feel like when I walk into that room is these people all know each other. I'm the outsider. I don't fit in here. This is uncomfortable. I want to get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with this at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's the biggest one that came to mind just because we were just recently in that situation.
So that's the thoughts I think that go with it. Can you picture back to any body sensations that
body
happened
sensations.
In there?
In those cases, no. Where I noticed some things, and they were similar to what you're talking about with body notice stuff. And it's funny, I've actually learned to use this as an indicator is at work. So I'm a person that deals with problems at work, like mm-hmm. I'm a manager, so when there's a problem, and I always tell the people this, look, you know, that's what the managers are there for, to deal with the problems. People get upset, start yelling, just say, hey, look, hold on a minute, let me get somebody else. That's what we're paid to deal with. But I can notice at certain times I can handle those situations well, and at other times obviously I get angry and defensive and all that. And usually one of the indicators is I can sort of feel my heart rate go way up, and I can feel my face get hot. I guess mm-hmm. I always say red, but I can right. feel, you know, my face get red and my energy get way up. And I've learned to notice that as an indicator of like, okay, maybe we want to think before we start talking, because I generally will tend to say some things that are defensive and usually aren't going to make the situation any better. But I've learned those from making the wrong decision a lot of times, you know,
right.
reacting to that stuff and being like, okay, now I'm angry, so it's on. Now we're in a fight, and so we're going to fight.
Right. And I think you're onto something here with the idea that, like, over time, if we're somewhat self-aware, right, if we're trying to pay attention to ourselves, like you practice meditation, you do some of the body scanning techniques, I think over time we do start to pick up on some of these ideas, right? We just maybe don't have the whole picture of exactly what the nervous system's doing and why and how that all operates. But some of those can be really useful without understanding that. And that's why some of us kind of come to better terms with where we're at and understanding that. But yeah, I think understanding the concept as a whole just gives us more information for what to do. We want to look at thoughts, sensations in our body, images that pop up, like anything that comes to mind. Like some of us have a very specific message that goes along with these nervous system states, right? Whether that be like something our parents always said to us, something along the lines of you're not good enough, but it pops up every time we hear anything that, you know, seems similar to that. As soon as we go in that state, we're like, oh, that's this thing happening. Other things to pay attention to is like how your eating habits change in any of these states, and how your sleeping habits change, right? And I mean, I think some of those seem pretty natural to be kind of across the board. Like when you have that racing thoughts at night and that sympathetic energy place, like it's hard to fall asleep, right? Whereas when you're more lethargic and in this dorsal vagal bottom of the ladder experience, it's you probably want to sleep more, right? Because it's kind of an escape from, and that's already where your body's feeling is this immobilized kind of disconnect. So sleeping more might make more sense. Eating varies, I've found, a little more with people, like when they eat more, when they eat less, depending on what kind of energy or state they're in.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I've noticed for myself, and I don't know if this is thinking or subconscious, maybe it ties into this, maybe not. I seem to notice like when I have stressful days or harder days or times that I feel stressed, I'm way more likely to just eat the fuck whatever, like whatever's easy or whatever's really high sugar, high calorie, you know. Typically what I'll say is foods that are bad for me that I try to avoid, but on stressful days I'm like, fuck it, I'm having a cheeseburger, like, fuck it, I'm having some ice cream.
There might be some sense of safety you get to from that, right? We all talk about comfort foods, but there also might be the idea that your nervous system is high alert, high energy, so it's using a lot more energy on those days. So
yeah, it wants that high carb rush for that energy, huh? So I mean, it feels like it's getting ready to go into battle, so it wants to.
Yeah, it needs to, and that's so. Where do we help our recovery community? And nobody has to buy into this theory, right? There's definitely people online who argue that it doesn't have enough scientific merit behind it yet. A lot of the science they're doing on it comes from looking at babies and their heart rates and how they kind of regulate. But what can we do to help people when we, like, I don't know, we just have this idea, and I think it's been in my head for a long time, this idea that, you know, I don't think I made the decision to get clean necessarily, right? I've kind of given that idea to maybe a higher power or the universe. It was just time, whatever you want to call it. But like, I wanted to be clean long before that and couldn't, because every time I would detox, I just went back. And I didn't have words to describe that then. But if I was looking at it through the polyvagal theory lens, well, I still felt survival, right? I still felt like I was in danger constantly. And so I kept going back, and when I got, you know, into recovery for real, maybe something different had taken place there, where it was like a little more ability to sit in the uncomfortable nervous system states, and maybe it was a little more comfortable nervous system states around that. And I don't know exactly what happened at that point, because that was a long time ago and I wasn't really paying attention.
Right.
But I've carried that belief into like not really trying to shame people who don't quote unquote get it, right? People who come into our program who are like, they just keep relapsing, whatever you want to call it, chronic relapsers, people who keep going back out. And I feel like there's a lot of judgment in that. Oh, well, you just need to work the steps. You just need to surrender. You just need to do this. And I look at this theory and it fits in with my belief. Like, I don't think I could have done that before the moment it was gifted to me somehow. So
yeah, like something happens where we, for whatever reason, make the connection to that community that creates some sort of safety or
yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like maybe there was a touching counselor in a particular detox that made me feel like a little warmer and safer in the world. I don't know if that was a certain person in the first meeting I went to, or at least the first meeting that I decided to try something different. Like, I don't know what that variable was that shifted in me. But why we have a lot of judgment towards people for you just need to accept that you can, and you just need to call yourself an addict. It's like we all have this idea of if you just did this, you would get it. And what if people can't, right? What if we're in this hijacked nervous system where our brain is not calling the shots? Because I think that's where a lot of us are on most days. If we're not aware of what state we're in, then we're definitely being run by something outside of our brain.
Right. And just like you said, understanding that these states exist and that I move through them, like now I immediately think, oh, huh, I'll have to start paying a little more attention to my physiology and when I'm, you know, reacting to things, you know, take a minute to look right. at some of that. But I said recently, you know, I've changed one of my old recovery ideas, you know, and we hear it in meetings and stuff. It's like, if you just do what I do, you'll get what I get. Mm-hmm. And I've sort of changed that to be like, well, I don't know that that's true. You could do exactly what I do and you might get something very different.
Right.
Like, you know, and that's because I don't know what your story is or what, you know, is going on behind the scenes with you that you might interpret things different or have a different experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is like we have similar experiences, but we all do have our unique experience of what happened through our life, the story of that, and then what's happening in our life now, right? And every situation is a little different. But I guess, you know, what could we do from an understanding that people are operating? I mean, really, when you think about this, if it's your body and its nervous system that is taking over and hijacking your reactions and your brain is just like fumbling to keep up, you're really out of your mind. I mean, right. That's kind of the definition of being out of your mind. And I don't say that to say that that's necessarily a bad thing. I almost feel like when people say to me in therapy, they're like, oh my God, I feel like I'm losing my mind. I'm like, we want to lose your mind long enough to find your body.
Yeah. And I thought when I was in addiction, you know, and the things I would do and people would ask, like, why do you do the things you do? I would say, I don't really know. And I didn't know, you know.
Right.
Intellectually, looking at the situation, you know, 2 or 3 days later or when I was sitting in jail, I'd be like, man, that was really stupid. Like, yeah. Why did I?
But
I was
that?
Just reacting or responding, you know, without thinking. And then, like, say, creating a story later of why.
Right. Right. And maybe that's what I hope, if nothing else, we get out of this, right? Do I expect people to go out in the world and be like, polyvagal theory is the one, right? There's no right or wrong theory. Anything that works is good. But maybe just the understanding that we aren't a brain down person, right? I think our society is very big on this, like, brain first and everything else comes next. And I just don't really necessarily believe that. I think we're much more of a body, brain, spirit, true self, organism kind of thing. And all of it plays a key role. Now, when you talk about the nervous system, it's got bidirectional communication, meaning that your brain does talk to your body organs and your organs do talk to your brain. But 80% of that is from the body up. So the brain really has like a fifth of what's going on, and 4/5 of it is your body communicating to your brain what's happening inside it. And so I don't know that that proves that the body has a bigger say, and I don't know that I'm necessarily trying to say that, but I think without awareness that the body is running some of the show, we just run around operating under the what's wrong with me theory.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that idea comes into play with nutrition and stuff a lot nowadays, where they talk about like healthy gut bacteria and how your gut microbiome affects the way you think and how you feel and all that stuff. I mean, that's all right. Biological stuff going on at a level that, you know, I mean, I would say we don't understand. Lay people don't understand it. Smart mm-hmm. scientists kind of are starting to. But, you know, all I know is I'm supposed to eat fucking yogurt and kimchi and kombucha, you know, because right. I want, you know, my body to be in a good place and my brain to be in a good place so that my reactions, you know, are healthy and strong and not, you know, impaired.
Right, right. And I think, you know, there's a whole nother branch of, you know, therapy theory that deals with somatic experiencing and how the ways we feel and think influence our bodily experience. And that's...
Can I ask a dumb, dumb question and uneducated? What is somatic experience mean?
It's like physical experiences.
Okay.
So basically, like, if you have an upset stomach, could it have been just some nasty stuff you ate that was old and bad for you? Sure. Could it also be that you're excessively worried? Absolutely. Right? So it's like the bodily, physical experiences of the mental health state, even though we talk about mental health, and I feel like the mental part is kind of like a misnomer because it's really like this feeling, emotion, and thought kind of process, right? This like physical sensation process is a part that doesn't feel included when we talk mental health. But again, top-down society, we think the brain is everything.
Yeah. And even in recovery, I mean, we talk about physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of the disease, but for the most part, you know, at least it seems like we really only talk about the mental and spiritual. You know, we aren't.
Yeah.
Other than stop using, that's the physical part. We don't really tell people, like, no, you need to worry about your health and your physical being and your body. Right. Like, those things are important.
Yeah, every once in a while we'll throw in there that you should see a doctor if you don't have insurance and haven't been seeing a doctor.
Right.
But
you need to go get checkups.
Right, right. Yeah, and look, and this isn't like to shame anyone who struggles with eating, but we definitely kind of overlook that in our fellowship. We don't run around and be like, oh, you're not working a program. We don't say that. And I don't think it's so much about working a program, but okay, I'm clean off of drugs. I still don't feel safe.
Right.
My body is still reacting. My nervous system still feels like it needs to be in a survival response. So now what do I do? Well, I sex, I gamble, I eat, I do the next things that bring some sort of safety.
So is the theory, though, that I guess I'll use the word some people, although it feels like not many if you look at like ACEs scores and things, but is the theory that some people grow up healthy and that don't, I guess, get into these lower level states?
No. Okay. No, everybody's going to experience these states no matter what. It's how we don't want to be hijacked.
The way we cope with them, that's the problem.
Well, we don't want our body to be hijacked by the state. We don't want it to feel like we don't have any decision making or understanding, right? So once we understand, oh, this is sympathetic energy happening. Well, now I start, right? Just in the beginning, I start to have the idea that, well, maybe if I understand that, I can do something different. Okay. Right. When I just react and yell at people in my family or break something, or there's no chance there for anything different to happen. But if I'm like, oh, I had one last night at dinner, right? Somebody in my family said something at dinner. The conversation was going a certain way. I was like, this ain't good. Like I can feel this sympathetic energy coming. And look, it still wasn't ideal for me. The best thing I got was, hey, I think we're done eating dinner. Like most of us were done anyway. We were just kind of talking. I was like, I think we're done here. We can all go back to what we were doing. And then I like walked over to the door and just kind of stared out of it for a little while. But that's better than other things I've done, right? And it's just that understanding, okay, I feel this state coming on. I'm aware of my bodily experience right now and the sensations. Now I can try to do something different. And I think over time, that can get even better looking. It can be like, oh, well, I have energy. What tasks did I need energy for recently? Like, did I want to vacuum my floor and I didn't feel like I had the energy for it? Well, I can probably do that now. I have energy, right? Why not do something useful with it? But also listening, like, what is it? Now if I can remove myself from that danger environment, I have the ability to like have the awareness to, okay, well, what helps me when I feel like this? What helps me return to a feeling of safety? Well, let me do that. And now that I'm at a feeling of safety, what was it about that conversation that made me feel like I was in danger? Like, what was it that rubbed me the wrong way? And maybe where does that come from my history? And how can I reevaluate my belief systems about that? But none of that happens if I just yell. Like the reaction keeps all the higher level stuff from happening, which is stuff that happens later from a healthy, safe place.
Right.
Right. And I guess like the things we can do just, you know, if you're out there and you're wondering like, well, okay, what can I do now that you've given me this polyvagal theory information? Like, sounds great. Now what? So the first thing we want to do is exactly what you said. Like, let's pay attention. how does this affect me? Where am I at throughout my day, right? Let me start tuning in to when my body is having these different ladder reactions in its nervous system. The next thing is, if we want to do this, we can create a you know, a map. Like, what does this look like? Like, physically sit down and write down, okay, well, top of the ladder ventral experience feels like this, and this is what happens to my eating and my sleeping, and, you know, I am blank, and the world is blank in this state. And so from a ventral place, maybe that's like, I am love, and the world is safe or open or connecting, right? And then we do that again for the middle of the ladder, sympathetic experience. Well, what's going on here? Sleep, eat, thoughts, sensations. And then I am, and for me, it's usually angry, right? And the world is dangerous, unsafe, threatening, right? And just, and then again, do that for the dorsal experience at the bottom of the ladder. Once we've created that map, we really start to key into when we're in these spaces, right? And then from there, there's some other exercises you can do. There's one called a vagal break exercise, which I found to be kind of interesting. And so if you picture a bicycle brake, right, how it kind of clamps around the tire to slow it down. So your sympathetic system, the middle of the ladder system, is attached to your heart, and it makes your heart beat. But if it didn't have anything restricting it, your heart would beat like dangerously fast all the motherfucking time. Like it would be verge a heart attack, cocaine popping, you know. So what it has, the vagal system at the top, they believe, has a clamp on it, very much like the bicycle brake sort of concept. It's always on to some extent. It's unlike a bicycle brake. It never releases fully, right? So it's always on at some extent. But we can kind of key in with a visualization and thinking about it, and we can squeeze that brake tighter. And I like that analogy. Some people use some other ones, like opening a faucet or whatever, a little more.
Well, and they always say take slow, deep breaths. Does breathing exercises help?
Yeah, breathing exercises can help if that's something that works for us. But I think incorporating this practice of visualizing going down a hill, if you've ever gone down a hill on a bike and you just got that really that scary experience of holy shit, I'm going to lose control and die, right? That's the exact experience that happens in sympathetic, which is that reactive danger survival response. And so what we picture is like putting the brake on a little tighter, right? Just like when you're going down the hill and you put the brake on a little tighter, and then you slow down and you feel safer. And then as you want to, if you're so inclined, you can let it off just a little bit. Again, it never completely comes off, but you let it off a little bit. Okay, well, I'm comfortable now, but I do want to go a little faster, right? And from there, we get a little bit of control over regulating how much energy we want to have. Is it total control? No. I think the awareness is a big piece, but then these are just little things we can practice to kind of help stabilize and regulate our systems. And another important thing would be to have people in your life that have that top of the ladder regulating experience. Do they talk with a modulated voice that kind of goes up and down? Because that's soothing to us, kind of like you would talk to a baby, right? Jen has a very top of the ladder soothing voice, which I said was going to make me look terrible, and it and it does. But yeah, we, you know, how we talk, how we interact with people, we need these safe co-regulators in our life to help us feel more regulated. If you're having a sympathetic experience and you got other sympathetic or dorsal people around you, that's not going to fucking help at all.
Right.
You're going to feel like out there. So
yeah. And you start to think that that's normal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, hopefully we're healing and growing and becoming these resources for other people in our lives to the best of our ability at any point in time. But really just raising our awareness. And this isn't just for people trying to get off drugs. I mean, anybody who feels like they have that reactive pattern in their life in recovery, like, oh, I always do this when this happens. And I always say afterwards, that's not the person I want to be, but I can't seem to change it. Well, there's a reason. Your nervous system is taking over, man.
Yeah, you're being hijacked by your own body.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. Pay attention to your nervous systems. And maybe, you know, when we start our recovery sort of program meetings, like we'll be more in tune with that. And
I have some polyvagal exercises.
And, you know, again, like if they proved the whole theory to be unscientifically provable right now, I don't even know that it matters, because it just, it feels like it makes a lot of sense for my body. And I feel like, if nothing else, it guides us to more body awareness and more like just being slow and kind and compassionate with people. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think that helps us feel more safe no matter where we are. So maybe when we're dealing with people, we just need to think of that. Am I helping them feel safer, or am I, you know, also guiding their body into feeling more dangerous?
Yeah, or finding empathy in that maybe these people are just, and I don't want to criticize people, but maybe they're not overly healthy or not overly well, and they're just reacting, you know, in a way that, you know, that way I don't have to place a judgment on, like, they wanted to cut me off. They wanted to, you know, whatever.
Right.
Be mean to me or...
Right, right. Yeah. How much of our lives isn't really a choice before right. we know it's not a choice? But all right, you got anything else about that?
No, interesting.
All right. Take your polyvagal nervous systems out there and do some good in the world. See you next week. Did you like this episode? Share it with people you think might get something out of it. Check out the rest of our episodes at recoverysortof.com. Also, while you're there, you can find ways to link up with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, YouTube, anything. We're always looking for new ideas. Got an idea you want us to look into? Reach out to us.